Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Today, it's our final Producer Picks episode. Our producer, Jordan, has selected some segments she has produced that left a strong impression on her. This hour, we'll focus on two documentaries that really moved her. First up is the Oscar-nominated Netflix documentary Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. The film tells the story of a summer camp in upstate New York for kids with disabilities, a camp that ultimately helped inspire the nationwide disability rights movement. Our guests were directors James LeBrecht and Nicole Noonan, who joined us last March to discuss the film. Here's producer Jordan Loft to tell you more about why she selected this segment.
So I wanted to revisit this segment because this was a documentary that made a very strong impression on me when I first watched it. I have to confess that I didn't know much about the disability rights movement before watching Crip Camp, and I didn't fully understand the significance and impact of the resulting Americans with Disabilities Act, which came about after years of sustained activism. But really, one of the reasons I love this film so much is because it introduced me to one of my new heroes, Brooklyn native Judy Heumann. Judy was, and continues to be, a leader in the disability rights movement, often putting her body on the line to advocate for more accessibility across the United States. In one of the most pivotal moments of the disability rights movement, in 1977, Heumann helped organize an occupation of a federal building in San Francisco in order to advocate for Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which called for massive retrofitting of federally funded buildings in order to make them more accessible to all Americans. After weeks of occupying the Health, Education, and Welfare Office in San Francisco, Judy Heumann and her fellow activists flew to D.C. to put further pressure on government officials to do the right thing. Here is Heumann confronting the representatives from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare.
Whether there was a Section 504, there was a Brown versus Board of Education. The harassment, the lack of equity that has been provided for disabled individuals, and that now is even being discussed by the administration, is so intolerable that I can't quite put it into words. I can tell you that every time you raise issues of separate but equal, the outrage of disabled individuals across this country is going to continue. It is going to be ignited. There will be more takeovers of buildings, until finally maybe you begin to understand our position. We will no longer allow the government to oppress disabled individuals. We want the law enforced. We want no more segregation. We will accept no more discussion of segregation. And I would appreciate it if you would stop shaking your head in agreement when I don't think you understand what we are talking about.
It was a turning point in the fight for disability rights, which eventually led to the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And, as a fun bonus, if you're a fan of the show Drunk History, there's an excellent episode on Judy's life and work starring Tony winner Ally Stroker. Here is a clip from that episode depicting Judy's impassioned speech, the exact same one you just heard, just with a bit more intense language, shall we say.
Boom. We're in Washington, D.C. And she's like, if you are going to claim to be a country of the land of the free, then you have to include us in it. Otherwise, yikes, do we have a weird revolution that's about to happen. So here's Senator Alan Cranston. You know, he's nodding his head. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I'm so feeling it. Judy Heumann's not having any of it. She's like, I'd appreciate if you wouldn't act like you understand what I'm saying, because you don't understand. We're going through this. You ain't. Party's over. Peace out. Sign this. Crowd goes wild. Everyone's cheering for Judy. Love it. Then Frank Bowe steps up and He's like, we're not even second-class citizens. We're third-class citizens. And here come the tears. How do you not cry after that?
In the 1980s, Judy Heumann continued to advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. Here she is in a 1988 Joint House-Senate hearing on discrimination on the basis of disability.
At the age of 25, I was told to leave a plane on my return trip to my job here in the U.S. Senate because I was flying without an attendant. In 1981, an attempt was made to forcibly remove me and another disabled friend from an auction house because we were, quote, disgusting to look at, end quote. In 1983, a manager at a movie theater attempted to keep my disabled friend and myself out of his theater because we could not transfer out of our wheelchairs. These are only a few examples of discrimination I have faced in my 40-year life, but this stigma scars for life. Many disabled persons experience discrimination of the same magnitude, but not every one of us possesses the intestinal fortitude and has the support of family and friends required to face up to these daily societal barriers. Sadly, these are not isolated examples, true only in the past tense. This is an ongoing social phenomena which haunts our lives at every minute. I have been told throughout my life to be understanding of these people's actions, quote, they don't know any better, end quote. Neither I nor any one of the 42 million other people with disabilities can wait for the 200 million non-disabled Americans to become educated to the fact that disability does not negate our entitlement to the same constitutional rights.
You'll hear more about Judy Heumann and the other activists featured in the film during Allison's interview. I hope this conversation with directors James Lebrecht and Nicole Noonan about the film Crip Camp inspires you the way it did me.
So, Jim, let's talk about the title of the film. Just get that out of the way. Crip Camp might feel a little bit jarring to some people in this day. Why is this the title of the film?
Well, it is kind of part of the nomenclature of a lot of the people that I know. And it basically is a way to kind of reclaim the word. You know, cripple has been a really horrible word thrown at us, and we started reclaiming that word and just using it as slang. And basically, it kind of identifies the spirit of the film, that it's irreverent, that it's edgy, that it's not your mm-hmm. typical story around disability. And you know, certainly I remember Corbett, who's in the film, you know, asking me one day, "Hey, did you go to Crip Camp?" And it's just that shorthand for, did you go to a summer camp for people with handicaps?
mm-hmm. So, Jim, when did you first get an idea to make a doc about Camp Gen Ed?
I've been thinking about this for a long time, probably about 10 years or so. Initially thought that the story was purely about this exodus of people from New York out to the Bay Area. But when Nicole and I got together and talked, and I mentioned this idea about, God, I'd really like to see a documentary about summer camp. That's when things really started to kind of pick up. And as we started digging in deeper, it was a much, much bigger and meatier story.
Nicole, what spoke to you about this idea, about a documentary about this camp? Which is, I'm saying, is only part of the documentary, but we'll talk about the rest of it in a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, when Jim first brought it up to me, I think when he said I'd really like to see a film about the summer camp I went to as a non-disabled person, I think I probably had a pretty stereotypical idea of what that was like and what the story was. And so when Jim started to describe the camp as this kind of hippie Valhalla and smoking dope with the counselors and music of the time and all this kind of joy and mayhem, and then I saw these fabulous photographs that he showed me that a counselor had taken, these beautiful black and white stills where you could just see the kind of joy and love of the disability community, because I think those campers at Camp Jened did form a really powerful community. I realized that it just broke down a lot of stereotypes and kind of preconceived ideas that I was holding, because the kinds of ways that we see people with disabilities portrayed in the media usually fall into a couple of tropes, you know, sort of what people sometimes call inspiration porn. This, you know, let the person with a disability inspire you by their heroic tale of overcoming, or sort of tragedy. And this was neither of those things. It was something completely new. And so I thought that that would provide a really powerful window for looking at a history that's been really overlooked and neglected, frankly.
So, Nicole, when you were starting to research and think about the story arc here, what came first? Did the profile of the camp itself or the disability rights part of the story? Is it a chicken and egg, or did one lead to the other?
I think we were really focused on the camp initially, as Jim said, you know, and how could we bring that back to life, which was sort of a quest that led us to this extraordinary black and white video shot by the People's Video Theater, which is featured in the film. But as we started to research sort of Jim's idea that there was something about the camp that provoked people to want to move out to Berkeley in search of a better life, like they had found at the camp, this sort of recreate that utopia that they had experienced, you know, free of discrimination. Then we started to realize, wow, a lot of people from the camp actually were involved in the independent living movement in Berkeley. And then a lot of people actually got involved in this kind of epic takeover of a federal building in San Francisco that that pushed forward the first disability civil rights legislation. And so then we got really excited, you know, could we draw a line from kind of that spark of inspiration at the camp all the way through? And of course, Jened was only one site of, you know, of kind of where people with disabilities came together and found community that led to the disability rights movement, which our film only shows a slice of, but being able to trace that ripple effect from that profound experience of liberation became the structure that we started looking at.
My guests are Nicole Noonan and James Lebrecht. We're talking about the documentary Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. So, Jim, when you sat down and you know, you reconnected and spoke to some of your fellow Camp Jened alumni, what was something that you'd forgotten about the camp that came back to you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I just think that seeing the camp through other people's eyes, especially the counselors like Lionel and Shelley Coy and, you know, and Joe O'Connor, who we meet at the beginning of the film, was being able to see it from their perspective of about how they thought about us and what they were giving and to us was eye-opening to me. It was really this sense of wanting to make sure that all of us had a wonderful summer.
Had you kept in touch with people?
I've stayed in touch with Judy Heumann for a long time, and some of the other folks also, but really had not connected with people like Shelley for a long time.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I read somewhere that you had been to other camps as a kid before Camp Jened. What made this unique? What made this special?
Well, at the other camps that I'd gone to, you know, you were not in a bunk. You were in a dorm, and the counselors didn't sleep in the same space with you. And also, I had to, like, go to bed, like, at 8:30 in the evening. But hearing about Camp Jened and how loose it was and how, you know, the counselors, you slept with the counselors and you stayed up, you know, all night talking and such, just seemed like this great place to go. And indeed, that's what I found there. You know, every bunk had a record player in it, and we were all talking about stuff and having a great time. And, you know, really, instead of feeling infantilized like I felt at the other camp, this, for the first time in my life, I felt like a really cool teenager.
So, Nicole, you mentioned this footage. There's this amazing footage that was available, and this black and white footage of the camp and the campers and the counselors, and it often doesn't have narration over it. So as a filmmaker, why did you want to set up the beginning of the film this way?
Yeah, that's true. The first 40 minutes of the film is very immersive, and we rely heavily on this Verite footage shot by the People's Video Theater, which was an early video coalition who are operating in New York, and they were taking advantage of the very first half-inch kind of portable video technology to set up what they called video theaters, where they would literally like put a TV monitor in the middle of Greenwich Village, and they would interview people from different communities, and then they would show the footage back to them as a community empowerment tool, you know, kind of ask them what matters to you and then show it back to the community, like, this is what your concerns are, and this is, they did it with the women's movement, they did it with the Black Panthers. So it was happenstance that they happened to run into a station wagon full of hippie campers and counselors from Camp Jened one summer. And the Jenedians said, oh, hey, that video equipment's pretty cool. Why don't you come film our Camp Olympics? And they showed up, and the camp was actually in mayhem because a couple of counselors had caught the crabs and they were disinfecting everything. And so it was kind of this, you know, crazy kind of joy and humor coming from the whole community and dealing with this. And so the People's Video Theater just stayed, and they shot 5.5 hours of footage. And after months of, you know, looking, we found that footage. And Howard Gutstadt and Ben Levine from the People's Video Theater were generous enough to let us use it and work with it. And so we have the capacity to kind of almost bring you into the camp like you're a camper. And you kind of, you know, navigate around it in a very immersive way, kind of maybe feeling a little bit uncomfortable at times with some of the campers that you meet, but then, you know, falling in love with them, kind of making friends as you fall in love with these various characters. And we kind of, you know, use that as a way to immersively shift the perspective of the viewer, help them to confront some of the stereotypes or misperceptions that they might be carrying, and really like just fall in love with this group of friends, so that as we move out into the part of the film that tracks the civil rights movement, you're seeing it in a different way, not as, oh, look at that heroic civil rights movement led by people with disabilities, but more like, oh my God, like, you know, my amazing, rowdy, rambunctious, cool group of friends who's now going on to change the entire world, you know, which they really did. I mean, curb cuts, like these very, very fundamental ways in which the ADA has changed the landscape of all of our lives for the better, was really brought about by activists with disabilities. And that's what this film tries to kind of let people in on a very immersive, personal way.
All right. I have to circle back to something because you brought it up. The outbreak of crabs at the camp. Jim, so this is just, I'm not saying anything, Jim. It's just very, in the documentary, one of the wonderful things about it is this idea that it doesn't shy away from sex or romance going on at the camp. And there's this sort of hilarious sidebar tangent about how the crabs were going around the camp at one point. Jim, why was it important to include these elements in this film?
Well, I think that's one of the stereotypes of people with disabilities, that is that we are asexual or that we have no interest or we're not capable of it. And indeed, that is so far from the truth, from personal experience and anecdotal experience, that, you know, we're like anybody else. And certainly in my specific case, you know, my 15-year-old hormones were raging like anybody else's 15-year-old hormones. So it's important. I think one of the things that the film really shows is this inside view of disability, and that it's not somebody else explaining it to the viewer, but it is people like myself and Denise and Corbett talking about their life experiences, and that, you know, that includes the whole gamut of the human experience.
You've been listening to our conversation with directors James Labrecht and Nicole Noonan about their Oscar-nominated documentary, Crip Camp. We'll have more after a quick break. This is All of It. You are listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Today, we're airing the final installment of our Producer Pick series. This segment was selected by our producer, Jordan. Here's the second half of our conversation with directors James Labrecht and Nicole Noonan about their documentary, Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. So, Jim and Nicole, either one, you can take this one. Judy Heumann is one of the counselors at the camp, and she goes on to be a pivotal figure in the fight for disability rights in America. Jim, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell back then that Judy was going to be a leader on this issue?
Well, very much so, I think. And first, just meeting her, she was such an incredibly dynamic person, and she's really the reason that I got involved with the disability rights movement, because I'm at camp and I know that Judy had prevailed in this lawsuit against the New York City Board of Education, who were refusing to give her a teaching position. And for the first time in my life, I realized, oh my gosh, we actually can fight back. People will listen to us. They will, we can actually change the situation we're in. And, you know, that to me was so profound. And, you know, you just see it in the footage of this film, even the way she's trying to organize the dinner for the cook's night out was, you know, this incredible organizer just at the beginning of her career.
So, Nicole, my producer and I last night were texting back and forth, like, Judy's my hero. She's amazing. She's incredible. What did you think when you first encountered Judy Heumann?
Well, we went to film with Judy when she was working at the State Department when we first started working on the film, which was a number of years ago now. And she was manning three different phones. She had a BlackBerry. She had two cell phones. And she was basically, organizing people all over the world to fight for disability rights. She's one of the most funny, warm, down-to-earth people you've ever met, but at the same time, she's just such a force. She just, encountering her is like really mind altering. And I came to see that Judy Heumann is one of the great civil rights heroes of our time, you know? And I think Jim and I took an enormous amount of satisfaction in being able to spend years digging around, looking for little fragments of archival footage with our researchers and editors, and being able to piece together a trajectory that takes Judy all the way from, a 23-year-old working as a counselor trying to wrangle the lasagna for the cook's night out, all the way to her powerful speaking as the ADA was being considered. And really showing how she truly did change the world. I think, this film, it starts out funky at the camp, but it basically, relates in some part one of the great civil rights struggles of our time. And we found in our research that, the archival footage and a lot of the material had not been cataloged well or taken care of very well. And we felt like we could play a role in raising up the profile of Judy and her story, which we know anecdotally has inspired so many young activists who are on the front lines of doing work around disability rights today. And we hope that it inspires a lot more.
There's an incredibly moving moment in the film when Judy, and you see the fighter in her, but you also see some of the pain in her when she says, there's a win. And she says, I don't know why I should be grateful that I can have access to a bathroom. Like, why should I have to be grateful about that? That's just a basic kind of right. So, Jim, for people who maybe not, really think about this in terms of our modern history, before the disability rights movement, what kind of protections and rights existed for disabled in America?
I think it was virtually nothing. You kind of got a sense that, well, this is your lot in life, and too bad for you, but it's your problem. And, you know, yeah, it was really kind of a charity model for anything to help support people. I mean, there were certainly civil rights, disabled civil rights movements and organizations that came before this movement in the 70s. But, you know, I just never felt like, you know, there was job discrimination. There was, and unemployment is still very high in the community. So there was nothing that I'm aware of.
When was your first when did you first participate in a protest?
Well, I started going down from Hartsdale in Westchester County to New York to go to Meetings for Disabled in Action, which is the organization that Judy started. And I'm incredibly, you know, one of the things that we actually have documented was that I was able to go to New York for a real kind of early Martin Luther King birthday celebration that was happening in New York City. And, you know, I knew some of the people from the camp from DIA were going to be there, including Pat Figueroa, who was one of my counselors at Camp Jeanette, this wheelchair-using guy. So, you know, to be able to participate and really get involved, that was really the first one. I have yet to be arrested, but, you know, hope springs eternal.
Nicole, would you walk us through the events leading up to the 1977 sit-in at the Federal Department of Health, Education, and Welfare building in San Francisco? That's a big part of the film.
Well, it is a big part of the film. So basically, the 1973 Rehabilitation Act, DIA and Judy and some of those initial protests and meetings that Jim was involved in helped push Nixon to sign that bill. And that bill had a provision in it kind of buried in the bottom of the bill that said that anyone getting federal money couldn't discriminate against people with disabilities. And the language was actually drawn from the original Civil Rights Act in 1964 and kind of put in there because activists at the time knew that there was no way that a kind of general civil rights bill for people with disabilities like the ADA would pass. And so what happened, though, is that nobody enforced it. The regulations were never issued, and so the law could never be enforced. So it was basically meaningless. And Ford never did anything about it. And when Carter got elected, people with disabilities had really supported his candidacy, and they were waiting for the regulations to be issued. And the Health, Education, and Welfare Secretary didn't do that. And so basically it was a little bit of what in the edit room we call the Selma moment, where activists all over the country, and Judy was definitely one of them, felt like we can't wait anymore. They started to hear that lobbyists from hospitals and school organizations, et cetera, were coming in and saying, like, look, there's no way we're going to be able to spend all the money it's going to take to make, you know, our buildings accessible. The transportation authority didn't want to pay to make the subways accessible, all of that stuff. And so so they felt like they had to act. And so Judy and Kitty Cohn and other activists in the Bay Area, and also activists in 11 cities, decided to stage takeovers and protests at the buildings of health, education, and welfare offices all over the country. And in the Bay Area, because there was such an incredibly networked group of different organizations, different civil rights organizations, Kitty Cohn and Judy were able to lead an effort that resulted in people not only kind of going into the building and taking it over, but staying there for 26 days.
That's amazing that they stayed in that building for that long. And there were definitely challenges in navigating that protest. How did they navigate the challenges of housing so many people with so many different challenges?
Well, there's certainly, I think one of the great things that Judy and Kitty and other folks like Ron Washington were good at was really being involved with other activist groups. And probably the key thing was that the Black Panthers came in and provided food every day. They provided three meals a day for the people inside, and that was really, really probably one of the most critical things. But you know, there was support from the Butterfly Brigade. There was support from a lot of the unions. So I think that that was really the key thing. We were able to get certain, supplies and medicine brought in, which, is really kind of a testament to the Bay Area and Mayor Moscone and everyone else that we had this ability to survive.
My guests are director Nicole Noonan and Jim Lebrecht. We're talking about Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution, a really excellent documentary. It'll be available on Netflix. When you think about camp, this is one thing you said at the beginning, Nicole, drawing that line from that camp to the disability rights revolution. What is that direct line?
We talked about it as sort of the profound experience of freedom and that feeling that people had that life could be better. Jim said early on in our work on the film, he said, you don't have anything to fight for if you don't know that it exists. And it was that idea that, people could have good lives. They could enjoy themselves. They could, express themselves kind of in the fullness of who they were. And that's what those teenagers experienced. And then that was such a motivating force for people to be able to go out and create a world that would allow them to live a chosen life like that. And so I think you see just that, going back to Judy Heumann, she just has this, she just refuses to accept injustice, and she refuses to not call it out when she sees it or feels it. And so I think, you see a moment we trace in the film, even when she's in kindergarten and she's thinking about the oppression that she and her friends in her elementary school class are experiencing by being pushed into the basement and being the downstairs kids in special ed while the upstairs kids are upstairs. She has this thing where she gets really angry. She maybe even starts to cry, and then she controls herself, and then she pushes forward and fights for what's right. And you see her do that, kind of all the way through the film. So I think you see the power of that. You see the power of even a small, relatively small number of people just being inspired and deciding that they are not going to accept, second-class status in our society, and how that can really spark great change.
Nicole, did you mean to make me cry at the end of the movie? Last 10 minutes. Straight up crying.
At Sundance, I remember a few times, these big hulky guys came up to us and said, "You made me cry."
We still cry even now. We've seen it hundreds of times, and it still makes us cry too.
That was my conversation with directors James Lebrecht and Nicole Noonan about their Oscar-nominated documentary Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. You can stream the film now on Netflix. Coming up, we'll continue with another documentary selected by our producer Jordan, Dick Johnson Is Dead, which sees director Kirsten Johnson grappling with the slow decline of her father's condition after being diagnosed with dementia. Stay with us.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.